IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes. Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Crystal.
And I'm Hillary. And today we sit down with a member of the Grip Department with credits to their names such as The Flash, Star Trek Beyond, and Tomorrowland.
Please welcome Executive Board Member Casey Chan. So pull up an Apple Box and let's talk.
Welcome, Casey.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in today, Casey.
Yeah, it was fun.
So tell us about your first time getting into film. How did you end up in this crazy business?
Long story or short story?
Well, long story. We can edit.
Okay, sure. Long story. So I used to go to CAP for other reasons that weren't film related, and I saw they had a technicians course, and that's literally what they wrote down in the thing. So I signed, and it was 1 month. I had $1,000, $1,004 in my bank account. The course was $1,000. So I was like, okay, this sounds like a good idea. So I did that. So I had $4. And took that course. And that day of, at least in my head, this is what happened. I don't know, maybe I signed up for the wrong course. But I showed up and they're like, okay, you're going to learn how to be a grip today. And I was like, cool, what's that? So got put in the grip course. There were four girls in the course and bunches of dudes. And me being me, I was like, oh, let all the girls be in one group. And he's like, no, we can't do that. So that was my first introduction to how they like to do things. Anyway, so one girl per group. But we were still all baller and rocking, right? Like, he's like, you guys can't lift a dolly. And then we're like, watch this. And then we did it. And the girls are like, why'd you make us do that? And I'm like, okay, yeah. Anyway, so took that course. And then I started volunteering on shows. Because as you do, so you can meet people, you volunteer. Now I have more of a skill, so it's more desirable. And then a year later, the union called me because the union asked our teacher, do you have any students that would be interested in coming to work? And it was, at the time, I thought it was the worst timing I took this course because it was 2011 I took the course. 2012, if you follow the history of film in BC, that was the worst year in the longest time ever. So the 891 actually lost members, right? So that was one of the main reasons I ended up getting in, was they had the slowest year, so a lot of members had to go do normal people jobs. And then when the industry essentially exploded at the end of 2012 and into 2013, they needed people fast. Mm-hmm. So the union called me and I was like, cool, I've been working towards my days that you'd actually count to let me do it. And they're like, just bring us your stuff and come into the hall, sign a piece of paper, put in your application, and we'll see what happens. And the next morning I got a call saying, can you go to work? And I'm like, sure, I don't have a car. And he's like, okay, give me a second. And was like, I'll send you to Kenton Boundary to work on this movie called Tomorrowland. I think you could get there on time, but taking the bus. And that's how I ended up on Tomorrowland for 90 minus 11 days of my qualification membership days.
Yeah, you know, you said something interesting in your early, I'm also an alumni of CAP University, but you said something really interesting about the ways in which you kind of garnered the experience to even submit your permittee application and kind of how vital those relationships are, even in a one-off course, you know, and to really foster those and, you know, it's really word of mouth.
Yeah, it really is. And most of my classmates from that class are now working at, they became grips at some point. Like, some of us got in earlier than others, depending on how hard you wanted to hustle. But they all were grips at one point for 891. And now have, you know, some of us still are, and some of us moved on to being part of the camera department.
So how would you describe grip work to someone who's not familiar with it?
Ooh, so, well, this is probably age this too, but does everybody remember Tinker Toys?
No? Maybe? What? That might be across the ocean problem.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, well, Legos?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so
good with Lego.
Take Legos, but put a bunch of sticks in it. Okay, and it's all wooden. Anyways, the toy doesn't matter, but that's how I describe what I do. Is I play with Tinker Toys all day, but they're like life-size Tinker Toys. So basically, it's like playing with Legos all day.
So they're the Apple boxes, they're the C stands, they're the stands that hold the lights, they're the flags.
Oh, okay, yeah. So all of that. Getting technical. So if you go to a photo shoot or a concert, I love describing what do I do in terms of concerts. So, because almost everybody, or probably everybody in the room, has been to a concert. Most of your listeners will probably been to a concert. So you look at a concert and you go, what does not have electricity running through it? A grip would have put that up. So have I built a stage? Yes. Did I get to be the person that crawled under it to put all the bolts in it? Of course, because I'm the smallest person on the crew. So, you know, get bigger. I don't know. It's really hard to get bigger when you're small.
tell us about that though, Casey. I mean, it's the grip department is heavily male, right? And yeah. As everyone knows, and you know, what's your sort of journey been like and taking up the space that you need to take up on set?
Being female was interesting. When I first started, I liked it better. Mostly because I was one of the only young females. So all the other women that I had ever heard of or met, their numbers are all in the two-digit numbers.
And you're talking about seniority numbers?
Yeah, seniority level. So, like, that means they've been around since almost the beginning of the making of this union. Like, they built the grip department. All the grips know them. You would not mess with them. Like, these women are Amazons. They're so cool. I'm scared to talk to them or shake their hand. So when I came about, it was a little neat and a little frustrating because everyone, even if I've never met them, would know I'm me. Not based on my name, of course, because Casey Chan, they kept thinking I was an Asian male, so that was awkward. So I ended up having, in the first couple of years of working, a reputation. Lucky for me, I'm not stupid, so it was a she's a smart ass reputation. Oh crap. But yeah, so like I got a reputation for being smart. So if you can put up with a smart person, then you could have her on your crew. If you can't, because it takes a special person to want to work with, want to have a smart person on the crew, because they're going to be useful with builds, but they're also going to be annoying with them too, because then they'll point out all the stuff and be like, why are we doing it that way? Which I do that.
How do you encourage someone starting out to advocate for themselves well?
The biggest thing when I left Tomorrowland and they sent me to another movie, all he said to me to make sure that I was kept was listen. So I was like, wow, that's easy, because, you know, and it's easy. So this was funny, because then I learned the difference between male and females in trades. Because males in trades like to use their muscles. Muscles are awesome, by the way. I had them for a while. They were really cool. So I get it. I get why they're like, oh, yeah, I can lift the thing, because that is super cool to lift like 150 pounds by myself. I felt super awesome. But if you're not listening to your boss, what's the use of being to lift the thing? Because you didn't know that thing needed to be lifted. So I was like, wow, all I have to do is listen. And females are trained from birth to be listeners. Not necessarily a trait I'm happy with, but I'm pretty good at it sometimes, not always. So paying attention to the radio was easy. That was the same thing too. It came to bite me in the butt later on, but, he told me listen. So I did. And there was a point where they couldn't find a piece of gear. And I just went back through my brain. Where was the last time I heard it be called for? And I knew where it was. And I don't even step on set. And I was like, hey, check that corner. And they're like, do you even know what you're talking about? I'm like, no, I just heard you guys say this like 10 hours ago. And they're like, woo, thanks. I'm like, yeah. And it was an Apple box actually.
You know, it's moments like that that actually get people called back, though, right?
Yeah. And it's, I like those kind of moments too, because everyone's always looking for, oh, the hero moment, whatever. But that kind of thing is just, it's not even a real hero moment. It's just, were you paying attention 10 hours ago? Are you still awake right now kind of moment? Like, yeah, actually it was, because usually I'm asleep, by the way. So it was amazing that I was awake to tell them that over the radio. Yeah.
Well, and it's that reminder that everything we do in this industry is connected to someone else or something else. And you never know which conversation you have will lead to your next job.
Yeah.
So you said that you brought a tool of your trade here today. Can yes, we do a little show and tell, and we'll kind of describe for anyone listening what you're doing? All right. She's reaching into a bag. I see a shoebox.
Because I also brought my boots too. So I brought this.
Okay.
So what we actually call it is a spud wrench.
That legit looks terrifying.
Right?
Looks like that's prop. Something that happens like on the side of an icy mountain right before someone gets left to the wolves.
So this wrench is a Burton wrench up here. It ratchets.
So that's the top and it's round and it's spinning.
Yeah.
So this is now where everyone Googles Burton wrench.
Burton wrench.
Come back in 10 seconds. Yeah. We'll still be here.
So it has two different sizes. Don't ask me the sizes because obviously I covered them up with sash and tape. But so we call it a Burton wrench because you have Burtons that you connect. They're 90 degree swivel, whatever you want, but they're the connectors that you use to put two pipes together. So, and then my favorite version, because you have twist ones, but seriously, twist ones are hand assist because not everyone's hands work every day. So that's not really fair to use grip strength personally. So the wrench, you put it, it's a bolt, you put it on, right? You've seen a wrench before. There you go. Boom. Not really that fun. The reason why we're talking about this being menacing is because I call it a spud wrench. So on the back end, it's a spike. And I love this thing for so many reasons. I'll tell you the technical reason for having a spud. If you're building scaffolding, this is what it was built for, to align the scaffolding. It could be when you're putting down a deck. It could be when you're putting two uprights, whatever, any part of the scaffolding. It's all little pieces and notches and they slide in together and then you have to hammer a thing through a hole. So you throw this spud in it and then you can like anchor it, you can wrench on it, you can move it around to actually be able to put whatever you're putting through that hole through there. So that's the main reason for it. And I started using it for that. Super cool. But for anyone that needs leverage, because only really riggers or non-on-set grips need one of these, because you're not going to be building a whole two-story scaff while you're on set. There's not enough time. And this is heavy, too, by the way. It's like, I don't know, I would say 5 pounds at least. So you can just take it. And since these are cheap, because you never do this to a nice tool, so don't do this to your jet wrench or gear wrench or anything. But you just take it and you whack at it. That's why I love gripping, because you get to hit stuff and it's part of your job.
So in your pre-interview, you talked about two of my all-time favorite shows. Not only do I love 30 Rock, but I'm a diehard Star Trek fan. Can you tell me from the inside what it was like being on Star Trek Beyond?
Really funny. So my first job on Star Trek Beyond, because I was trying to moonlight as an electric, so I actually got to sit on the line and make all the little lights. So when the Enterprise turns on, it has all those lights. And so I helped make all those lights. So that was cool. And my uncle's a super fan. So we went to see the movie together and I'm like, wait for it. And then he's like, oh, and I'm like, I did that. So anyway, so that was the first thing. And then I was bored being on a line just soldering things, because I do like soldering stuff. That is pretty fun to melt things on other things, but it's not the same kind of fun as like getting to move around and whack things. So I wanted to go back to being a rigging grip. So I did that. And then we built the blue set where they're on that blue planet. And then I met this other awesome female rigging grip. She's so badass. Okay, I'm sorry, I keep saying that word. And like she's a rock climber. And at the time, I just thought that made being a rigger easier because we were in a rock quarry. And now, after watching all the climbing we do, I'm like, oh, okay, it's not just because we were in a rock quarry. So she decided she could do it because her significant other saw me working and was like, yeah, I saw this tiny grip. You could totally come do this because she's huge, right? And I'm like, I can't believe you chose to come to work because of me. That's crazy. Like, I'd come to work because of you. So that was cool.
So let's kind of switch gears a little bit, because you are part of our executive board as the member at large. Can you explain what that position is and what motivated you to take that position?
You had to be the largest person that ate a full pizza. No, but that sounds really good. I would do that if they would give me a pizza. A previous board member told me to do it.
What does the position member at large mean, though?
I've redefined it to make it work for my personality. So it's member to member issues when you're not on the same job site, because we don't, we're contract based, we're project based. So you can have worked with a dude and had work related issues and now no longer work on the same show and still have those issues. So it's not a shop steward problem anymore, but it's still kind of a union-y problem or potentially a union problem. So how do you deal with that? And way back when the union decided that a member at large made sense or something like that. So that's how we have one. And so I am a tiny person that breaks up fights in the union. So you're welcome, everybody.
Not physical ones.
And not with the spud wrench. I hope.
That's only because they told me I'm not allowed to.
I was just going to say, you have a very interesting view on what your department's motto would be. Can you share that with us?
So what's a grip? Grrr. Because they're big and they don't say lots. I don't know.
What I find interesting about people who are intrigued and get into gripping is that they have these like really unique talents, like some crafty, some very industrial, some, you know, and some very, very artistic inclinations. And you just never know. You just never know the stories people have and why they actually chose to do that.
Yeah, I think the grip department feels like they're the butt end of the joke in the union sometimes. Like they're, oh, we're just one level up from a PA, which, you know, the PAs do a lot, so they deserve a lot. I think they deserve the most respect, but that's not what we're here to talk about. But like, if you want to go with that mindset, then you're going to end up with that kind of experience on working on a set as a grip. If you look at gripping for what it actually is, and it is really hard. So I hate it when anyone's like, oh, I could do that. And then you're like, okay, go put up an 8x and then come back and tell me how easy that was. And you get to do it by yourself. Cause some of us can, some of us is me anyway, can put those up by themselves. And when you get to watch those people put those up, then that should really be on YouTube because you'd make a lot of money. It definitely takes a certain level of skill. And I feel like a lot of the guys that will argue with me on that, it's just because they've been doing it forever, so they don't recognize it as a skill anymore because that's just what they do. You know, putting two pipes together is not as easy as putting two pipes together, because if you've never done it before, you're going to have no idea what that Burton is meant for. Mm-hmm.
So. Well, and there's a huge safety component, and that just comes with experience, right? Like your equipment is what's holding up other equipment and people and cameras and sets, right? So it's extremely important position.
Yeah, and I found that really funny too. So we're really good at making sure there's generally always two of us based on safety. And this is one of the only departments I've ever heard use the word safety as often and from the very beginning of me working. And they're not even thinking of it from a standpoint of how do we make our, like, you know, from a corporate version of making our workplace safer. They're literally just, how do we make sure we don't kill someone else today? And that's why they have to think about safety. So it was really fascinating getting into the safety world at how much safety stuff they actually do. And you're trained on that if you're the person that gets to rig the stuff in the air or off a tree or whatever. Generally explicitly told this is why you're doing that, because you are making sure that set piece isn't falling over, you're making sure that this is weighted properly so when the electrics put their umpteenth billion pound light on it, it doesn't fall out of the sky even when they move it over to the left a bit. Like, so we're at the point where a lot of stuff is really standard, so you're like, oh yeah, put a pipe in the air, put HSS on it because this is going to happen and whatever. In the real world, thinking about putting a pipe up in the air and someone's going to put a weight on it, that weight's fixed where it's going to be. That's not our case. So you have to rig it in a way where that person can move it around. That's magic.
So give us a day in the life of a grip on set. So let us peek behind the curtain a bit. What do? You get to set.
I put my boots on. I put my tool belt on my shoulder specifically so everyone knows I'm a grip, because that's really important to me, especially if it's an angry day. They need to know I'm a grip. And then I go get breakfast. I drink a lot of coffee. And then I go stand at the truck and wait for my best boy to tell me what to do. And on a good show, he'll know that I'm antsy, so I need to be given a job right away. If we're unloading the truck, that's easy. We'll just start unloading the truck and put the stash wherever the key wants us to put the stash. And some days I like that part of it because you're getting a lot of your energy out, right? Because unloading most keys make you unload the whole truck.
And when you say key, that's
the key grip. So our boss.
So the head of the department.
Yeah, the head of the department. I like expelling my energy. So unloading the truck is a good way to do that because you're expelling too much energy. But I don't like being around a lot of humans, which is hilarious to be someone that works in film because everywhere you go, there's like a bajillion humans. So I didn't work on set a lot. I did a lot of the stuff where they knew they needed an 8x, a 12x, whatever, and I'd build all that stuff off the side. I liked being the stash person because I'm a weirdo that for Christmas my mom would buy me a bunch of little things with little drawers and I would organize those. So I liked organizing the stash and keeping everything together, making it really easy for everybody to get the equipment they needed. And I liked fixing things, so I fixed a lot of the stuff. When I was bored, so I'd find a C-stand that was broken and I'd fix that. So there's a lot of different types of things you can do. If you are a person who likes to be around other humans and in the action, then by all means, sure, go on set and stand around watching the director walk. That could be cool. but I prefer to fix the things that you guys break, or I break, because I break a lot of this stuff.
I love that story though, Casey, because there really is a fit for almost anyone in this industry.
Yeah. And I think what I hear from that is also just don't make assumptions that you won't fit, right? Because if you keep looking long enough and be like, lean in to the things that you know you bring to the table, there's going to be a spot for you.
Yeah. And there's like, so exactly, there's giant dude jobs where you need giant dudes to do the thing, right? Like sometimes you don't want to get a 6-step ladder. You just want to get a guy that's 6 foot tall. Sure. And experiencing that, it's actually super fun. But then there's also little people jobs, right? Because the 6 foot tall dude really doesn't want to be under the deck putting in bolts. I don't either, but I fit. So it works. So I have a poop jacket in my car just for that job.
A poop jacket?
Yeah, I call it the poop jacket. And even in the summer, it's a winter jacket. It's really old, so I leave it in the car. And even if it's summer, I'm like, okay, you want me to go under that deck? I'm putting the poop jacket on first. Because I assure you, if I don't care if they tell me there's not poop there. There was poop there once.
Oh, gosh.
So that jacket will be put on.
So it's a jacket you don't mind getting dirty is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Got it. So if you had one piece of advice to give someone looking to get into the film industry that would encourage them, what would that be?
I don't know if I can narrow it down to one thing.
Oh, a few things.
That's a laundry list of things. If you have a lot of energy and you're just willing to jump in there and do it and just get in there and work and try anything, then you're the right person to come work in film. And it doesn't even matter. You can try all the departments and see what works for you, what kind of personality works for you. If you need money fast, that is also a really good reason to get it. But really, you at least have to be good at something, though, to get kept. So you're not going to make a lot of money unless you're good at something. And if you like being creative and you don't want to go to the same place every day, then film is for you. Because that is the one thing I'm missing right now, working a normal job on the side, is I am going to the same place every day. And I have learned that is not my thing. I like the traffic because I know exactly what's going to happen. But otherwise, I know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm a very random and wacky person. So the something different every day really tickled my fancy. So
I think that's a bit of a common thread with a lot of folks in the film industry, you know, the change, the constant change, the different circumstances you find yourselves in, and working in the motion picture industry.
Yeah.
You know,
just cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. Thank you, Casey, for coming in today and giving us a look at a day in the life of a grip.
And that's a wrap for another episode of Apple Box Talks.
For more episodes and to find your fit in the film and TV industry, check out ourwork.ca.